Welcome back.
What happened to the theaters? They let us in. I get to do this. I'm going to walk across the stage to get to you. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm excited. This is the best part for me. I walk on the stage and suddenly the lights hit me and I think to myself, people, and the floor creaks under my feet. It's great. All right.
It looks good.
Thank you. That's important for radios, you know, or recordings or podcasts or anything of an auditory nature.
Of course.
I see you're here at the table, and hello, friends.
Hello.
We've missed you. We decided to come downstairs. It's also daytime, so at any moment there might be a dog barking or a car driving by. Bear with us.
We'll edit. Four children home from school.
Right. They may come barreling through at any moment. If so, accidental guest stars all around on this exciting episode of
Two Clowns in a Closet.
Wow. So smooth. It's like we're ready to work.
Yeah.
Well, we no longer have seasons.
Correct.
So this is the first episode of 2025 or second?
It's the second one. I think the other one did come out in early January.
I do know that I did get a lovely offer of a slogan.
Oh.
I did, because last episode, if you recall, I asked for slogans and I got one.
Yes. What is the slogan of the podcast?
Okay, well,
This episode of Two Clowns in a Closet.
Or, as the slogan puts it, what is the sound of two clowns unpacking?
Nice.
That's great.
I like it.
We might stick with that one because we're still on, at least until we're done unpacking or we get another one.
Yes.
Yes. But here we are, still not unpacked, certainly.
No.
The building updates, things have slowed but are moving. We finished a bunch of electrical work.
We did. We got all of the bedrooms upstairs rewired, yeah. So they're grounded and things are safer.
Yeah, electrical fans, take note that if you brought a fan here, it would work safely. And in the correct direction, because some of those were wired backwards, which was terrifying. The other thing we've done work on is we have broken ground extensively on our future library.
Yes.
And
built a wall.
I did. The most untimely thing I could have done during this portion of the real world was to build that wall.
Accurate that you closed in a door.
I ripped out a door, I ripped out a door, and then I framed a door, and then you and I hauled a bunch of drywall up there and
stuck it in there
and mudded and did all the things. There's a wall where a door once was, and that alone is a big job that I didn't realize I was going to get to do. And I've patched so much drywall in my life that I thought, oh, there's no problem. I had no idea how to do that. I've never done it before.
It was fun, to be honest. We got to use some new to me power tools.
What did you use that was so exciting?
I used a saw.
You did?
That I hadn't used before.
It was very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, a circular saw. It's not a big deal, but
I saw you do it.
See what you did there.
Here for the puns. I think the thing is, every job we do takes longer than we think. Every job we do is harder than we think. Every job we do is more frustrating than we think. But we do keep thinking, we do keep doing stuff.
Yes.
And that is the part that on that side of things keeps me going. It's always strange because I sit there and a week ago we were talking about this. We're like, oh, we're gonna record, we should talk about it a little bit. And I was initially very upset because I'm like, oh, nothing has happened. And then I look at the list of all
plenty has happened. Lots of stuff got
so
done.
Much. And I'm just talking here in the building. Yeah, so much is happening. It's a matter of scale and perspective. If you zoom in on it, it's overwhelming. And if you zoom out on it, it never feels like enough. And there's got to be, in my mind, on any project, big or small, there's got to be a moment where you hit the correct level of zoom where you're like, huh, stuff's happening. And so what I'm focusing on today is, huh, stuff's happening. Personally, I do have a piece of advice for my friends who are doing any sort of renovation stuff. And then I don't want to talk about renovations anymore.
Okay.
I do have one. Get yourself a shop vac attachment for your sander. Because this is a human health warning. One of the jobs in fixing up this room was sanding the ceiling and patching up the ceiling. Because the ceiling is blown apart and cracked through and terrible. And we're fixing it.
Yep.
Soon it will be beautiful. Right now,
it needs work.
It needs work. And some of that work has been done. But I initially just put on a respirator and went up there and got so covered in dust that I got in through the respirator and I was very sick for a few days. I'm fine. Everything's good. But I learned a lesson and we went and we got a wild shop back attachment which attaches to the hand sander and not a motorized sander, just like a hand sander with a vacuum hanging off the end. And the first time I used it, I turned it on and I stuck it to the ceiling and it stuck to the ceiling.
That's too much vacuum.
And the bucket that it was attached to that was acting as a filter imploded.
Once again, too much vacuum.
Right. It sucked.
Really well.
Exactly. Whoa. That's fine. So I got all the adjustments. I got the thing dialed in. I got a stronger bucket. And the advice is set all this up. It feels like a lot of stuff because the second time I went back to sand the ceiling, while it was so much slower because I was constantly moving around this hose and me moving my hose around and talking about sucking. That's what I'm doing today.
That's what we're doing today.
That's what I'm doing today. But meanwhile, while I'm up there, the room is not turning into a cloud.
Which is good.
And I wasn't sick the next day.
Yes.
And the entire upstairs is not covered in dust. And these are good things that I wish I had known sooner. And so please, whenever you're doing anything beyond a little tiny bit of skill, consider getting the right tools for the job. It's a continuous lesson for me.
Keep getting that lesson.
But keep getting that lesson. Figure out what you need and go get that.
Yes.
Give it to yourself and say, here is a gift for you.
Yes.
So you don't die. So that is my advice to you, is figure out what you need, give it to yourself, and get the right tools, and don't breathe wall dust.
Good advice.
Do you have any building notes updates?
Building notes and updates. Well, there's the electrical, which I already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a little bit of a slowdown in building stuff.
That is going to be true.
Coming up, because I am getting top surgery in a little less than a month. So we'll see whether that is before
or after
this episode comes out. That depends on how fast I transcribe.
I suspect that your transcription will come to a complete halt for some period of recovery time.
Possibly.
Or you may sit there with nothing better to do.
Just spending a little bit of time doing that.
I'm actually trying to be really wordy and charming to that person, thinking, well, you know, that might be a fun way to recover.
So much work to do.
Yeah, just I'm using a lot of extra words. I'm being loquacious and enticing with my verbiage and attempting to create a few bon mots for the purposes of elocution.
Of course, you're doing it all in the first few minutes of the podcast.
Oh, I'm going to get tired.
You're definitely going to get done with before.
Yeah, I'm going to blow my wad and just grunt at the end. I'm sure of it.
Which is so much fun to figure out how to spell.
Huh? It's true. So
there will be a little bit of recovery time from that, in which I don't get to lift anything heavy or do a lot of heavy work. So it'll be a little bit before I get back to doing a lot of house building.
I'm also excited because, and this, it's a weird sort of excitement for me. The last serious injury, not that I celebrate that at all, that you had, you sprained two wrists and you came back from it and you came back stronger.
Yes.
And your handstands actually got better. It was a handstand-related injury, and you came back better than you were.
Very well rested, and then retrained, yeah.
And I'm so curious to watch the curve of you, not just recovering, but who do you become after you take that break and you come out of it and work.
It should be very interesting. The recovery process should be very interesting, and the recovery specifically back into doing circus stunts and acrobatics and handstands, because my center of gravity is going to change.
Yeah. So, picking you up is going to be completely different.
So it's going to be completely different, and I'm very much looking forward to that exploration and finding out what that looks like. I've actually been doing a silly game online. So every time I have a caffeinated beverage, I do a handstand.
We've talked about the coffee. Yeah, the coffee handstand count.
And the coffee handstand count with my injury with my wrists got up to 205. Because I keep count when I can't do it, and I won't be able to do handstands for a while. So I will be keeping count again, and so I have put forward to my friends and those who I chat with online a silly little game of guess how high the coffee handstand count will reach before I start working it back down.
Are you going to include our listeners in this, or are you going to encourage them?
If this is out before...
Even if it is after, you're still...
That, I'll still be recovering. So yeah, definitely. If you have a guess...
How many handstands will Liam owe the coffee handstand bank?
Yes. For everybody here who didn't see the online ask on this, general guidelines, I tend to have 2 coffees a day on average.
Because you don't have a problem.
I don't have a problem.
You have a solution, and that solution is coffee.
Exactly.
Dissolved in water.
Exactly.
Usually boiling.
So that's the silliness of the moment, looking into the future.
Future's good.
But that's building news.
And if we record again, I mean, obviously we're going to record again, but I mean, once you're back up enough and thinking about wanting to record again, we'll check in about this. It's not going to, certainly not going to be the focus of our discussions here, because our focus of discussions or the questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, just like the building, we're going to check in with what's going on.
Speaking of checking in on things that people actually have asked questions about, but I already addressed those questions, and they've since had an update.
You're going to have to explain yourself.
People have asked about my clown persona.
Oh! Speaking of things that happened here!
Being given the gender shift, and then the break from going out and performing, I didn't know... who my clown was likely to be, and whether Jane was staying in, whether I'd be dealing with Chadwick, who I'd be interacting with when I got back into that state. But I have gotten back into the clown state for a very fun and silly day in the gym, and I can say that my clown is back, is clearly feeling like they've got history both as Jane and as Chadwick.
You've blended.
So I appear to have blended the two. And he's exceptionally chill.
All I know is that you came in the room and there are costume pieces attached. This is Jane. Mm. It was Jane's shirt.
It was Jane's shirt, yeah.
And a minute I saw that, I went, well, that wouldn't be out without a reason. Maybe there will be an attempt. And then I watched you light up, and as a clown teacher, I went into that, there's a mode, a provocateur support mode,
yep,
where instead of being excited and playing with this person, oh, I want to play games with this person, because that's what my clown wants, is that's my clown's, my best friend is my clown, and that is my clown's best friend. So that's my best friend's best friend right there. I want to hang out with that person.
Yes.
But I also knew that you needed that support, and it was so interesting to sort of like constantly bat at you and then leave you alone to go discover and watch you out of the corner of my eye the entire night, having all of those discoveries and being very in and very excited, very on. And it was sort of like babysitting someone else's child, I imagine. It's just rambunctious person running around and
yep,
occasionally showing up and saying something brilliant and running off again. It was great. For me, it was great. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. And I think that's one of those things that in all the building doing and all the, you know, the life stuff and everything else, we forget that you got to do the work. And that has been one of these big hanging questions, is what will come of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm very excited, because this means we're going to get to see that clown and perhaps other characters and other things. We'll see what that unlocks in time.
Yep. We have not asked that person what their name is.
We need to.
So that has not happened yet. We did check in on what their hairstyle is.
How did we check in on their hairstyle?
You asked.
Did I think to ask?
Wow. Yeah, you thought to ask directly what they wanted in their hair. My hair was a bit overgrown at the time and kind of doing that like round shape. And
what was the answer?
He said something to the effect of, so long as it's up. But there was a hand gesture of my hands to the side of my head, going upward that very much indicated a hairstyle I favor anyway.
Well, that works out well.
Of
I have to look of, like this.
Sort of the shaved down sides and floppy on top. So
it suits you.
It seems to work.
There you go.
Haven't had them back out since then, mostly because it took me forever to get around to cutting my hair. And since they'd actually said something about it, I didn't want to bring them back out with
the
wrong hair.
Well, there you go. Well, that is a big piece of news. And mm-hmm. I suspect as we continue exploring, we'll bring updates about that. I think that's the good stuff.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you have specific questions, do ask. I'm looking forward to finding answers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think from a teacher, provocateur, facilitator standpoint, this also means that you are technically the first clown. Your clown is the first clown who wandered in here. Because
that may be true.
That may be true. Because I would argue that mine, I don't know if mine showed up or not. I don't know. Actually, there was some stuff we did early on, so maybe. But the point is, beyond me, it's very exciting that there's a clown here now.
Yes.
I don't like to use words like energy because it sounds more woo than I intend, even though what I mean is very woo.
Yes.
So that energy has pervaded the room. It's good.
Yeah,
It's good. I think we've bantered.
We've bantered. We should probably get into the questions.
Yeah, we don't do words from our sponsors. We do random words from friends.
Yes, yeah. But we already gave the
slogan. But that's not a random word from a friend.
Do you have a random word from a friend?
Ruminating.
Ruminating
was a random word from a friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's a random word from our friends.
That's right.
And now.
Now what?
Back to the questions.
We hadn't started the question. How can we get back to them if we haven't started yet?
I don't know, but that's always what you do after the word from sponsors.
You are so bad at this.
You then go back to
the
thing.
This is like saying, here's me with the weather, now back to you in the studio.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
Here's me with the weather, now back to the questions.
Here they are. I've got them.
Okay. The weather was nice, by the way. Thank you for asking. Rude. Rude.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Rude.
It's a little bit chilly.
It is. And we're in the tail end of winter here, which the seasons sort of go like this. Wow, it's cold. No, it's not. Wow, it's cold. No, it's not. Over and over and over until suddenly, apparently, it's spring.
That seems to be what it's doing.
Yeah, we're just doing that. So during the day, it gets up to beautiful temperatures, and at night, wow, it's cold.
Yep.
I'm going to say it one more time. Wow, it's cold. But not right now. Right now, it's fine.
Yeah, right
it's now, a little it's chilly.
But it's lovely.
Sure. We've gotten off track.
Are you ready for the first question?
Me? Yeah, yes. Sure. I love questions.
All right, then.
Give me something to do with my time.
I will read you the question.
You'll read the question for my benefit. You're probably reading them also for our friends' benefits, who are not here to read them themselves. Don't make this all about me.
It's not all about you, but this question is directed towards you first, because I'm the one who happens to be holding the pile of cards.
I feel like this is a power move, and I'm suspicious, but continue.
All right. What's the biggest thing you ever saw inside a theater?
The biggest thing I ever saw inside a theater, discounting my thing. So
thing.
not my ego.
No.
Not
I don't think you can see someone's ego. You can see evidence of someone's ego.
You could feel mine.
And you can feel it, but I don't think you can see it.
Yeah, my charisma, not so much, but my ego. Yeah. Biggest thing I've ever seen in a theater. Wow. And a theater, because, you know, it's
inside
easy to
say, a theater,
not an arena. Ah. I'm at a dead split between a scale puppet of a fully mechanical elephant.
Ooh.
That was the size of an elephant and a pirate ship.
Ooh.
From a production of Peter Pan. Those are the two things that I immediately think of. So I'm going to go with the elephant because we want a real answer here.
Yes.
The elephant was amazing. That was from, it was a circus theater show, a circus musical.
Oh,
Oh,
you're right. It was.
You're thinking of Elephantum, which is a different show.
Elephantum, which is a different show.
But that's a smaller elephant. It's a smaller elephant. Circus 1913 or 1903, I think. I've lost that. It had nothing to do with history. It just happened to have a number in its name. And I remember seeing it with a bunch. We went with a bunch of circus people.
We
ran into a bunch of circus people, which was sort of funny. And the show is just a musical that is circus-y.
Yeah, it's a circus.
Yeah.
It's set in a circus.
It's set in a circus. So, of course, all the circus people went there to go, how'd you do? And we all walked out saying the same thing. Elephant!
Exactly. All of us said. Elephant!
Yeah, I ran into an old juggler friend I hadn't seen in years there. Wow, I'm having like a vivid flashback to an event which literally happened
many years ago.
15 years ago. This is a pointless ramble. And so get me out of it, grabbing my peepers here, my reading glasses. Try to imagine me, friends, somewhat smarter now because I have the reading glasses on. Thank you. What's the biggest thing you ever saw inside a theater?
Well, I also saw that same elephant puppet.
You did.
Which was very large.
It was the size of an elephant.
Yes. And so I don't know whether this other one was actually bigger or smaller.
But risk it.
I was in a production of Into the Woods, and part of that is a giant's head.
The giant falls
down at one point,
and is sort of on set for half the second act.
No, it's not. Isn't it? It's really just there for like a minute, but
I'll say in a production where they just left the
it was where they just foot, left it
they
there.
Just left a foot in the background.
So I have seen a giant.
So you've seen, but you haven't seen all of the giant. You've seen.
Well, no, because you can't put the whole giant on the stage. It's too big.
Well, there'd be no room for the actors.
Yeah.
No, you'd miss several really good numbers.
But there was that. There was also a very large tree. I got to be inside the tree. That was fun.
Well, it was big enough to hold you. Would you say it was larger than an elephant?
Probably not, though. Mm. So it may still be that same elephant, but I figured I'd at least bring a second.
Elephant and giant. That's what we've got.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of both.
Yeah.
Always be a fan of giants.
Yes.
You don't want to.
Best to do that.
Best to just be on the side of giants if you can, because they're large and you don't want them to step on you.
Precisely.
Exactly. Well, that question, I think we've sorted it.
Yeah.
I'm racking my brain. Was there anything else that was big that I've seen on a stage? Ego, talent.
Oh, plenty.
Plenty of that. An entire euphonium.
That's pretty big.
It's large. A marimba. That's not big. What's the biggest thing you've ever seen? Yeah, it's looking for a specific sort of bigness.
Yes.
Friends, I'm fine, don't worry. I just feel like I need to reassure when I go off on a...
That's fair.
All right, I'm
bigness.
Back. Okay. This one is one of my favorite types of questions because it implies our friends are listening.
Oh, I because love this it when is, it implies.
This is a question listening. About something we said, which also means, Liam, you're going under a bus.
Ooh, bus time.
Yeah, metaphorically a bus. I've seen buses on stage. Are they bigger than elephants? I'm going to say no just because I want to move on.
Okay.
All right. In an earlier episode, Liam said, because one of the things I've been told many times from many teachers is some variant of the idea, don't copy, steal. How would you delineate the periphery between copying and stealing?
Oh, that's a tricky question.
So, first off, so good, and the word periphery was used correctly.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Can we just take a minute and be impressed with the smarts of our friends?
Yes, most definitely.
All right.
Well, let's see.
You guys did so good with that one.
So, the don't copy, steal line. Where's the difference between copying and stealing? I think that this is one of those... This reminds me of the concept of the ship of Theseus. Which, if anybody is unfamiliar with, is the question essentially of if you have an object, in the case of the ship of Theseus, is a ship.
No.
Right?
But if you Who'd it belong to?
Theseus.
Get on with it.
If you have an object, over the course of its life, it's going to need repair. And so you end up replacing each part of it over time. And so there's the question of, is it still the object? Is it still the same object if every single part has been replaced? Mm. Or is there some point partway through where enough parts of the object have been replaced that it's now a different object? And that's a lovely thing to just ponder, but...
You brought a philosophy experiment, but not an answer.
But I feel like it's a similar... It's a similar thing, which is that if I watch an act and I go, oh my gosh, I want to do that piece. Because
there Do you ever look at a whole act and think that?
I don't think I ever have.
It's always, to me, it's like one little tiny piece
of it. But I do know of people who have essentially copied full acts.
There are terrible people to steal. Yeah, we know.
Well, and there's the question of copying versus stealing.
Yeah.
And to me, when you look at a piece that you know you want to take, whether it's the full piece of it or a part of it, you look at a piece and you go, that, I'm doing that. You have to go and approach it and start playing with it. And I feel like you essentially swap out your concept of how they did it with your concept of how you do it.
Okay.
And that will be little pieces at a time. And that's through experimentation and through playing with it. You'll reach a point where it becomes second nature to you. It actually makes sense. You know, if not exactly the why, it's because that's the next natural step for you. Like, that's how your brain says the next step should go. Which may or may not look the same as how it was done by somebody else. And that can end up looking different. Like, that can be as simple as, well, I see this object is on stage. I'm going to walk up to it. Or I'm going to crouch down and look at it from a distance. Those are two different ways that a clown could approach the fact that there is an object on stage. And it's two of infinite ways somebody might approach that. The one that's true for you is the honest one.
And carrying each step forward from that
place. And take each step forward from that place. And so, to me, once you have honestly done every step, whether that ends up looking from the outside exactly the same as someone else doing it, or completely different from someone else doing it, my feeling is that is the moment where you have successfully reached the other side of copy versus steal, and you have now stolen it. Now, I also feel like something that is also true about performing work is it's a frequently stated concept that you'll really understand the piece after the first 100 times you've performed it.
Guilty.
So you may end up performing something when that ship is only halfway rebuilt, or only a quarter of the way rebuilt.
I think that's unique to clown because so much of this work is done with the audience. I mean, you have to perform something new to understand what they're receiving.
Exactly. And so I think that there's a certain amount of that that's going to happen in workshop.
Hmm.
And I think I think it's your job as a clown to do a certain amount of that in workshop before and, bringing it to...
Oh, and don't inflict it on an audience.
An audience.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also think that the reality of the situation is there's only so far you're going to get in workshop.
Yes.
And you have to push that. You have to try for that. But that you still may be at only a quarter of really having explored what you're doing. And some of it is still because that's what the script says.
Hmm.
But I think you need to try to get rid of that as much as possible so that you understand why you're doing things. And you know where the brain space is of the clown that's doing them. I think part of it's also when your clown starts doing the thing, they're going to do it their way. And you're very quickly going to discover where you were wrong when you scripted it about what your clown is going to do.
Oh, yeah. And when those are left in an act, those incongruities between the script that was copied mm-hmm. and the piece that was stolen, that was recreated.
That's where you feel it. That's
what's where the audience hates you.
Yeah. And that is why you need to steal rather than copy.
Oh, yeah.
Let your clown run at it mm-hmm. so that they can fix it. Is a definite real thing. So for me, that's the delineation. Okay. I don't think that you have to be all the way to stealing. You have to have gotten rid of the really egregious ones, those ones that someone can really feel.
You have to bring yourself to it and it to yourself.
But you probably actually won't have gotten all the way to steal when you bring it in front of an audience. No. Like that's just not how this
especially
works.
Especially if you're doing a lot of... If there's always a period as a performer where you're performing a lot and a period where you're thinking a lot. Like right now, I'm in a thinking phase.
Yeah.
When in the past I'm doing act after act and idea after idea and you're creating and creating, yeah, you'll bring something half-baked, especially if someone's like, just put something on the stage. We don't care what it is. You're like, okay, that's a great opportunity. That's a great opportunity. Obviously, you want to bring good work, though.
Yeah. So for you, how would you delineate?
Well, what Liam said
the periphery between copying and stealing.
Well, what Liam said when he was describing the shtick of Theseus is not far from wrong. To start off, that's good.
I love that.
The shtick of Theseus.
The shtick of Theseus.
Yes. The idea that you've got something and you have to, and I said, you have to bring yourself to it and it to yourself. You have to, there's only so many jokes, you know? We've been telling the same jokes in different forms over and over forever. And what changes is the setting, the scenery, and the characters. The, mm-hmm. the details change.
Yeah.
But the formulas, there are not so many formulas for comedy. There are not so many formulas for theater. And I think one of the things that I think about is I had an act. I saw a video years ago. There's this window that where I'm constantly looking at video, and now I try to avoid looking at anybody else's work. But I was stealing ideas, and I needed ideas. I needed some inspiration. I went looking at some clowns' work, and now I look at a lot of video, but I really avoid looking at clowns. They do silly things. I'm not silly. But I was looking at this, and it was a very classic clown joke. I'm about to describe in rough bones one of the oldest gags. You don't need to correct it because it is so old that there's been so many versions of it. And the clown comes out and basically indicates that they are going to do a high dive into a sponge. They take a sponge, they put it in water, they put that in a bowl, they put that on the ground, they climb up in a chair, and they go, and the big production is them getting ready, and they dive into the sponge. Now, there are many ways this plays out. The most typical way is the clown chickens out at the last second and splashes the water on their face. And that's how they get out of it. They splash the water and they act like they did the thing. And everybody has a good laugh. And it's a silly character.
And
piece.
They built it up to such a degree that's something that makes people feel good and not feel
Yeah. And there are some clowns that have actually done like partial handstands into the sponge and got their face wet and done the gag. I mean, there's been innumerate variations. This is a recipe that is not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What you bring to it is. And I saw this, and I knew none of what I just said about the great history of clown at the time. I just saw, that's a piece of material. And I had the guilty feeling of not liking to copy or steal. I didn't understand yet. And it's very early on. And so I sent a message, an email to the performer, because I found their info. And I said, can I take a run at this? I see it, and I'd like to play with it. And they told me, go for it.
Because they know that they stole it from somebody else, too.
Well, more than that, they later on told me it was an exercise from a class they were in, and it meant nothing, and the video was just class footage. It was literally a meaningless assignment. But they were like, but they didn't tell me that at the time. They were like, I give you permission to explore your creative process, which I thought was great. You know, they built me up, and they pushed me gently in front of the bus and said, you go and explore everything there. And I said, okay. And I built that into an act. By the time it was done, and this is the comedy of it, by the time I had brought myself to this process, and again, the process is to walk out, indicate that you are, not indicate, but show that you are, a high dive, you know, a daredevil character, and then you're going to stand on a chair and you're going to do a flip and land in the sponge.
Yes.
By the time it was done, those beats were the only remaining things in common, including the fact that I never stood on the chair.
Wow. I didn't realize you hadn't gotten on the chair.
I never stood on the chair. I'll tell you what happened. So I had this great idea. I have a collapsing chair. I got the collapsing chair because I saw another performer use it, and I thought, oh, I can never use it the way they used it.
That makes sense.
Because they sat on it and fell down.
Oh, no.
The only way to use a collapsing chair. And of course I've used it that way, but I didn't want to copy them. So I thought to myself, I have to use it. So it went in the back of my closet forever, and finally I'm thinking about this act. I said, oh, you know, it'd be really funny if I go to jump on the chair and the chair collapses.
Yes.
And then because I can't stand on the chair, I have to do the thing. So now there's a reason.
Nice.
And not only was this good, this was hilarious in the moment. I mean, it's not that funny now. But also, it set me up at the end of all of that shenanigan. By the time I was done, because I had done a striptease to get out of my bathrobe and put on my bathing cap on stage. Because, I mean, I added a lot of...
You'd add a lot of stuff.
I added a lot of garbage that was probably fundamentally unnecessary. But by the time it was done, it was my own little cartoon, and I was in a bigger show where the next thing was an act that involved chairs, and my exit with this broken chair set up the next act. So by the time it was done, it had changed so much that it was unrecognizable. And only at that point did the performer who gave me permission say, oh, that was an exercise. I can't believe what you did with it. What you did with it was great. So sometimes not knowing any better and being given the bones of a framework and being desperate not to look like you're copying is good.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to tack on the back of this, you were talking about acts that you perform a bunch of times before you know what they really are about.
Yes.
Sometimes you have a fully formed idea. In fact, I once had a fully formed idea, and it was about broken hearts and breakups and things that I was in the middle of. I hadn't gotten to the breakup yet. So I put that act away until the breakup was done.
You do.
And then I brought it out, and it was a great act, and I've talked about it before. But I had another act, and it was, I wanted to do an homage to several different clowns. There is a thing clowns do, I've done many times, where you put your arm through a jacket on a hat rack and it becomes a character.
I think you've talked about the hat rack.
And I've talked about the hat rack a bit on the show. But one of the things is I performed that dozens of times before I watched a video of it and realized that it was a story about like imposter syndrome and the desire for someone to give you sort of that fatherly chuck on the shoulder, permission to do a thing, and basically being told it's okay to be this by this sort of ghost of Charlie Chaplin that was in the room.
You didn't know that was the
thing. Not when I wrote it. Not when I performed. It's so obvious, of course, when you watch it now.
When you watch it, it's very obvious.
It's completely obvious. However, in creating it, I just wanted to do the shtick and some hat tricks. And I walked in completely unaware that, and I remember bringing this to a show and I was very excited about it, very passionate about it, because I was going to get to do this act in front of a lot of people. And there was a very well-known performer there. And the well-known performer used to work with circuses and knows a lot of clowns. And he walked backstage and he said, you stole Kenny Raskin's bit. And I was like, oh, I've been found out. He said, but you did really interesting stuff with it. Well done. And at that point, I felt golden because even he knew you're going to take from everything and bring something of yourself to it. I've had people copy things I've done.
Yeah.
And what they brought to it was completely different than what I brought to. What I will say is that the most important thing is that idea. that you're brought to it. Because if I watch you perform as a character that is not you, that incongruity will make me hate everything that's happening, even if it's good.
Yeah. What I think is fascinating is how much you can do something that is not you.
As a character, sure.
But it has to be you. Doing but also not.
Correct.
And it's very confusing as to the level to which that, where the honesty has to be.
Oh yeah, if I try to come out and be cool, no one believes it. But if I try to become cool on stage, it's funny, but also it's kind of cool. And we play with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There have been so many acts where the goal was to play something that was off type. And what my solution was almost always, and it goes back to like early mime stuff I did, which was to become a character on stage. Let the audience see you go through the transformation so they accept you. Let them see you.
Mm-hmm.
And then become, and I mean, let them see the clown.
Yeah.
And then let the clown become Wild West, cool guy, learn how to juggle, you know, whatever. Let them see the journey so they accept it, and then they'll play with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think for me, the tearing something apart, and there's a little bit of fear of imposter syndrome, and when that has been removed, you've probably stolen it.
You may have successfully stolen it before the imposter
syndrome. But you notice. But that's the thing, guys, that I never internally know. Everybody seems to think I have answers to these questions, but the reality is, until I do them, sometimes I sit down here and I've thought about an answer to something. By the time I'm being honest about it, I don't know. I don't know any more than anyone else. What I know is that I have seen a lot of material where, and I, as a teacher, I've seen a lot of material where I've seen a student bring something that they clearly were doing pop culture. They'd seen on a video. They'd watched a circus and decided, I'm going to do that. And they tried to copy it exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like watching someone wearing a suit that didn't fit. It was, everything was like, I really want to see what's going behind all this bad stuff. And what's funny is, of course, the stuff they were copying was the stuff I hated, and the stuff that they did, like, even if it was an act I didn't know, I'd start tearing things away and I go, what about this one thing? And they go, oh, I just do that. I go, yeah, but that's the good thing.
Yeah, that's the good
part. Do that part.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's strange just how noticeable it is. For such a hand-wavy, like, obscenity, I know it when I see it sort of thing, it feels so obvious when I see a performer copying versus having made something their own. It's visceral mm-hmm. for me. I feel yeah. it. And I'll ask. And that's the key thing, is if you get a chance to ask the performer, and I'm talking in a workshop situation, never do this to a performer.
No.
But in a workshop situation, as a teacher, when I have asked, I said, you know, is this yours? And they go, no. They'll collapse instantly. They know it's not theirs. Whereas yeah. the acts that I've gotten to where, even if I've copied them, like the high dive,
mm-hmm.
my high dive, it's now my high dive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, me and the rubber duck.
Yeah.
But like, it's a completely different experience by the time it's over, because I've just, like you said, you've changed mm-hmm. enough things out that it's not just the floorboards, the infrastructure changed. Because the big thing is the clown is the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And that's changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Good answer.
It took tearing apart a building and seeing some infrastructure to be able to say those words. I'm so glad I came.
Well, speaking of the building.
Oh.
Well done. You've managed to do a
Did segue. I do one of those organic segue things I keep hearing about? An
organic segue.
Wow!
This next question.
I want everyone to know that I'm not that good and I didn't plan this.
This next question is, after the building is prepared, what are some of the projects that are planned?
Okay, so there's two thoughts I want to say here before I roll in this mud. One is, this project is so much more overwhelming than I thought that I don't actually think it will ever finish. I have now accepted that it is, I mean, it'll get better. It'll continue to grow and evolve. But now I had to let go of this idea of when the building is finished. It's not ready for guests particularly, or us even, but I don't feel like it's ever going to get done, because we've got ideas that go on and on and on way longer than my useful lifespan, you know, which is a debatable on its own. But that one thing I want on the table. And then the other is the most exciting thing that's been happening around here is the messy art that's happening in the middle of construction. The clown shows up in the room. There are boxes everywhere. There was a clown running amongst the boxes, looking in the boxes. I feel like to some degree, I mean, I want some control over that process. That's cool. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
We've played music in here. We have made art and lino cuts, and we've done music, and we've recorded podcasts. There's things already happening, and I feel like it's really important to never cancel playtime until the work is done, because the work will always be ongoing. Okay. So I want to preface everything in my answer under those two things. It's never going to get finished, and because of that, I have to play all the time. That said, I know that there will come a point where things will be less day-to-day chaotic than they are right now. We will have less renovation and more growth at mm-hmm. some point. And it may happen before that point, but during that point, there are a few things I really want.
Yes.
And here they are, in no particular order. One. Masks, trance masks, full masks, clowns who are masks, were such a big topic right before we moved. I mean, they were mm-hmm. such, right before we moved, right before the world shut down. 2019, we were studying mask. Early 2020, we were very interested in masks. And throughout the last few years, I've been making masks. Mm-hmm. I now have a collection of them that have never been performed.
Yes.
So one of the things I really want to do is get those masks out and get them onto people and get characters happening. I want to see what happens. That may just be a silly day in the lab. That may be the seeds of a show.
Yep.
So those are both very, very real things. So that's the first one, is masks as a meta category.
Yes.
Two, I would like to get some artists here, and I use that term in the hand-waviest way possible, artist, creative people here, and get their input into the walls, whether it's painting a mural or making a song or workshopping. I want this to not, and I've been saying this forever, so it's just an old thing for me, but it's very true. If this place is just my voice or our voice, then it's an edifice to my imposter syndrome at that point. You know, it's just a place that's just my ego hanging, that big ego like the elephant. But if other people see the value in what we do and want to come and play into and leave their mark on it, they want to put their handprint on the wall of the cave.
We like that.
That feels magical. That every time I'd be walking around sad, I go, yeah, but somebody came here and they painted that mural, or they helped build this thing. They changed something. So that's a big thing, is that getting other voices here.
Yes.
The last thing that I want to do here, there are a set of, the stage has rails around it.
Yes.
And the rails are wrought iron. They're beautiful. And they surround the stage like it's a playpen. And because of that, it doesn't quite feel like a stage. And it's because it was used as a dance floor. And I want to remove those and have it be...
Yeah, definitely.
More
definitely.
An open theater space. I don't want to do that till the room is... You know, we talk about the room is prepared. That'll be one of those last steps. Because we go through the whole building, we're actually leaving the theater as our staging area, which is why it's always chaos in here.
Mm-hmm.
We're leaving it for last in many ways.
Yes.
And because of that, sometimes the work feels very far away. But I know by the time I'm doing that, I'm probably building a show. Yeah. I'm probably building workshops.
Yeah.
I think right now, to get back on the question, I'm more interested in workshops than I am the ego of my own performing. Yes, I miss performing, of course. But I think I'm very interested in sharing my ideas in the work, because I've had an extended think, you know, and I feel like I'm ready to share some of those ideas in the lab and give people. And I also know that it's some of my favorite memories are a group of people who have decided to come together and explore whatever it is, whatever theater thing, whatever mm-hmm. circus thing we're working on, and a little intensive. I would love to get a small handful of people staying in the rooms and do that like a pre, not like an official, like class schedules and everything, but like, let's do a lock-in party for a week.
And I think we will end up doing class schedules as well.
Well, of course we will, but that's not the part I'm excited about.
Yeah,
okay. I'm interested in the messy part when we don't know what the hell we're doing, but the place is in a good enough repair that we can, and the situation in the world is such that we can.
Yeah.
And that excites me because I don't know that area.
Mm-hmm.
I have always worked, I go to the circus center.
Yes.
I go home at the end of the day. I've always worked that I went to the theater and taught or performed and go home at the end of the day. I might go to a school and stay with them for a day and then go home each day. I've never lived in it like that, with the exception of, as a student, there were a few times where we were, okay, good night, everybody. I go upstairs and I go to sleep. And I've never done that as the teacher. So I'm interested in seeing what that's like. I hope I don't hate it.
If you do, we will have...
We've chosen poorly.
Yeah.
I don't think I will. I think what will happen, I think it is inevitable to know that I am human. And I think you will see the humanity, whether you want... I'm a lumpy, hairy, gross human, and people will... There'll be no ego in the game. I think one of the games of teacher that always bothers me, and I really want to disassemble it and see if it still is possible to be a teacher. When I come in, it's a status battle. I come in and I go, I am the great teacher. You are the student. You will grovel at my feet. You will listen to everything I say. And for that reason, you will learn. And there's this, and everybody goes, yes, 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 sensei. Yes, yes, guru. Yes, sifu. You know, yes, teacher. Yes, sir. And I don't like that game at all because it's not fun. And I managed to disassemble it a few times. When I walk in the room and go, everybody, this is a game we're playing. And I told them exactly that. And then it was fun because all the time they would do exactly what I said. And I would give them my best teacher. And we'd all be winking at each other going, this is dumb. And at the end of the day, we would, you know, it would be very different. And I'm very interested in knowing if you can dispense with that and just have a...
That would be an interesting
a conversation. And I don't know that
it
works.
I don't know if you can do it.
I don't know if it can. Because I know the provocateur has to be there.
I feel like you have to play the game. I think that you can do the thing. I've seen you do.
You turn it off.
The thing where you acknowledge at the beginning, this is the game we're playing, and everybody's winking while playing the game. But I think that's part of. I think that game may be actually essential to
the structure.
To the structure of the learning, but I am game to test it.
And I play around. I think what it is that I'm so. I have so much privilege in my role. I have so much privilege in my identity that I think it would be fun to explore. They always say that the best part about being when you finally have a clown partner is that you might not be the high status one. You might not be the one in charge. And I've gotten it. Ironically, with you, you are the first person who has ever had a strong personality across from me that could drive.
Mm.
And it's great fun because I get to play very dumb, very lost, very
dominant.
This
is true.
And so... I think it's a bit like that, where it's like, oh, yeah, let's try that. And one of the mental images I have for this place is that there's little corners. There's so many places you can be. You don't have to all be in the same room even, or in the same corner. Like we're all, the two of us are, and our friends are jammed into one corner of the theater. There's a whole theater. There could be something going on far enough away that it wouldn't be interrupting us, except for the noise.
Yeah.
And I think there's great value in being able to walk around the hubbub of creativity.
Yes, definitely.
And so I think I'm interested in feeling the theatrical equivalent of a makerspace.
Yes.
The theatrical equivalent of a hackerspace, where people are tearing things apart to see what happens. So that I think those are the things I'm most interested in. I think I've covered them.
All right.
How about you? When it is finally done, when the great project is done, the building is prepared. I'm not mocking the question. I'm mocking the realization that it'll never be done. What are some of the projects that are planned that you're excited about?
So, while I agree with you to a certain extent on things will never be done, because a building is a constant thing that requires upkeep, and we'll keep having more and more things that both need repair and that we just decide we want to change.
Sure.
But I do think there will be a point where it's prepared, at least prepared enough to start hosting people.
I hope so.
Where that is safe and reasonable to do. And I'm thinking about what projects we've planned, because we do actually have, we have some notes, because taking notes is important if you want to ever remember anything. And it's so easy to get lost in what we're doing and completely lose track of what we want to do. On some of the like intensives that we've talked about, seeing whether we can have happen. We've talked about doing doing masks for writers, doing a trance mask workshop.
Oh, yeah, I had forgotten about that.
For people
who are not performers specifically,
who are not performers, but who
authors.
For authors, for people who create using a different medium.
I want to do I want to do that for spiritual practitioners.
That's also
people who are exploring, because I think there's access to stuff.
And we were considering that possibly being an overlap on
I think it those, is. I think it is.
On those two. We've talked about, so in projects, I know that there are a couple of stilt costume ideas, stilt walker costume ideas that we have that are waiting until we have enough space.
I'm in trouble. I forgot to mention my promise.
You have made a promise to build a giant.
I promised one of our clowns that I would build a giant.
And I have a baby elephant.
Speaking of things that are large in theaters.
Costume idea that has been cooking since when we were back in the apartment in Texas.
We've been playing with that for years.
And
we that's now a four-legged. Yeah, it's a four-legged stilt creature.
It's a four-legged stilt creature. I'm very excited about it, and I needed the space both to build the thing, because it will take a lot of time and space because it's big, and then two, to be able to store it.
Right. Every time you have a giant idea, you have to have a giant storage facility.
Yes.
That's when we learned the hard way, because we had a full-size jack-in-the-box and aerial rigging and all this other stuff crammed into a... We had an entire show crammed into a storage unit for a while, and you need space.
Yeah.
We have it now, and we haven't built big since, because we're not used to it.
Well, and because we are still figuring out the space. And once you know where everything actually lives...
So you want to make some big stuff.
So I've got some big stuff I want to make.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of what else, because there's definitely, we want to start having some sort of a juggling jam that we're involved with like the local community.
Yeah, we've talked a bit about, and that may not happen in the building. That may happen, honestly, either right outside or across the street.
Yeah.
But the idea of just an open opportunity, there's a lot of kids in the area.
Yeah, we'd love to be able to give
space
for people to come hang out.
We could probably just go do that.
I think one of the things that will benefit that is once we've got more of a stable schedule.
Oh, sure.
Because our schedule is so wonky right now. Because we never know when we're going to be exhausted from doing some...
From hauling sheetrock up flights of stairs, yeah.
But yeah, I think those are some of the ones that I think of immediately. I didn't go back and check all of our notes, but those are ones.
Do you have a personal thing, like a creative project you want to work on? We should finish with that.
I mean, I have a lot of clown exploration to be doing.
Do you have an example? Very much looking forward to it. Do you have an example?
I don't. Other than just I want some time. With my clown.
Behind the nose.
But,
in the saddle behind the nose.
Yeah. On the stage doing stuff.
We conveniently have one.
We do. So I expect I'm gonna start getting into that before the point of after the building is prepared.
Well, you see, that's what it gets back to. You've gotta work while it's messy, otherwise you'll never clean it up.
But I expect that there will be much more of that. I mean, I want to do a show at some point. I just don't know what that looks like yet. So
yeah, we've had ideas, and I think that's what a lot of people are asking is shows. We have I remember, I can think of probably three really solid ideas that we have, that we have notes on, that that are structured enough to where if we said that's the one, we could build the shows out. And we just, I feel like each one of them has something that is missing.
Yep.
And that's why because they were things that we've been working on for years. They're in the writing queue. You always have something half finished. You always have stuff that's ready. There are three shows I can think of that are concept that never gelled because they're missing a piece. And when I find those pieces, they would become the focus in a heartbeat.
And I think part of that, one of the things that's been true for how we do things, and we were talking about this the other day, not in here, but somewhere else.
We'll fill them in.
Is that when we've developed shows, we tend to develop shows for the theaters that we're putting them in.
Well, conveniently, we know this one pretty good now.
And we've even really had a hard time being able to tour some shows that we wanted to tour because we discovered that we had really built it for the theater that it originally was in. And I think when we were doing a lot of coming up with ideas for the show, for a show, it was when we were still in the apartment. And we didn't have a theater in mind. We didn't have a particular theater in mind. We didn't have the constraints of a space to help us bounce ideas off of. And now we do.
Yeah, I was going to say, might I suggest this one? Because if you go, what we need to do is go find a theater, I'm going to haul off and
No. I'm saying now we do. And once the space is, once we've actually finished making some of the, at least the initial changes to this room, because there's things about it right now that if we were bouncing off of,
would break.
One, would break. And two, won't be there by the time we invite an audience in.
Right.
Like those rails.
I like the idea that they're like training, that they're like, you know, the baby bed rails or training wheels. I mean, that's what they are right now to me.
Yeah, the gutter rails.
Yeah, you take them off when you're not going to fall out. Maybe we should never take them off. And we can never fall. That doesn't sound fun. I have another question for you.
Okay.
It relates to the world of clowning, oddly enough.
Wow.
I know. What elements would you say are essential to the art of clowning?
Ooh.
Essential. Essential to the art of clowning.
My immediate first thought that comes to mind is curiosity.
Ooh.
I immediately start questioning myself as to whether that's something that's essential to my clowning.
What is the difference?
Or whether that is actually overarchingly true, but I think it's overarchingly true.
Just pile the dirt up and stand on it. It's okay.
Because it's a huge drive for my clown is wanting to know what's going on, wanting to explore objects, wanting to see what they can do, wanting to know what people are about. So I think curiosity is an essential element of clown. I think emotional connection, which is a rephrasing from my initial thought of joy, because frankly, while I think many/most clowns can and do experience joy, it's much more that you have an emotional connection to whatever it is you're doing, because it is just as much clown to see a clown sobbing as it is to see them happy to the point that they are bouncing off of the stage. And so emotional connection, curiosity, and I'd say honesty, because it's that thing we were talking about when something is truly yours is when you're doing it honestly. So honesty, and I think that that's one of those things of where we keep running into the clown is not therapy, but there are therapeutic modes that it uses, and you may want to get yourself figured out, sorted out, do whatever therapy you need.
Says a person who clowned for many years and then in the middle of that had to do some work on themselves.
Yep. Because
same.
Because the pursuit of self-honesty is gonna bring some stuff up while you work on it. So,
oh sure.
So
you think you can pack it all away and not use some piece of yourself, but it invariably shows up.
Yep. So I'd say those, if I were to distill it to like three things that come to mind.
Three things.
Those would be the like elements that are really essential to clowning is self-honesty, honesty.
Curiosity
and emotional connection.
Okay.
Short and sweet and to the point. So what do you think are the essential elements to the art of clowning?
I feel like doing that thing where the great clown wizards of time answer and do not unpack, but I will. Where they just turn and they look at you and they say, think. Yeah, pretty much. I tell you to think and you figure it out on your own. No, I think the three things that I would say, because I was you know, sitting here listing off vulnerability, which is very similar to self-honesty, but it to me, vulnerability encapsulates being both able to affect and be affected.
Yeah, I was going to say that's letting people in.
Letting people in. And I think that's because you can be wrong. Self-honesty is important, but in my mind, if you're not letting things affect you, it doesn't matter if you're honest or not. We'll never know. Because if you're honest about who you are and you're letting things in, we see it. And if you're not honest with yourself, you're letting things in and they're affecting you, we'll see that too. And that may be equally fascinating.
So discovering that you've been dishonest with yourself.
Yeah, and getting to see that is a whole journey. So I would say vulnerability is a huge one. I'm as a person who is day-to-day pretty armored up unless I drop that. And I have to go through an intentionality to do that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because vulnerability's hard. The second one's a word that's been coming to me a lot, which is the word whimsy.
Mm.
It needs to be encouraged, and it encapsulates the idea of play. Well, curiosity is there. This is about playfulness. This is about doing things just because they're silly, doing things just because they're play. There's no gain beyond the pleasure in the moment. And you can be, and I'd like to be pointing out, this doesn't have to be a very happy thing. The distraction from misery may be to watch the leaves fall. And that may be beautiful. And the way they fall is this, there's a little whimsy to that. There's a little playfulness to that. And to me, that's a big, I'm getting emotional about
that. You are, yeah.
Because the whimsy is the thing, I think we're all bad at. We get told, be an adult, grow up. Get a job. And I'm not saying those things to you, friends. I'm saying these are things that have been said to me and they're said to all of us. We're told, hey, get real.
Mm-hmm.
Get grounded in reality and la, la, la. And the world is brutal right now. I feel like the one thing we need more than anything is a play. We all need recess, adult recess, a chance to play. We need playtime. And I think about, like, I used to host improv workshops where it was just playtime for adults. It was mm-hmm. go and make play together as a group. Yes. And we play children's games. And a lot of clown is playing children's games as an adult very intensely, almost competitively in some cases.
Yep.
But not for any outside reward.
No, just because you play hard.
You play hard. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I feel like whimsy, but it's not about play, just about play. It's that overall idea, because there are times where play in that sense isn't possible, but you can have that mindset. And to me, the word for that mindset is whimsy.
Okay, yeah.
So vulnerability, whimsy, and failure.
Oh, yeah. That is an essential.
Clowns are technicians of failure. They are masters of it. They are fools. They are folly to it. It is our greatest gift because on one side of it, we fail and it's funny. We screw up. It's funny. And on the other side of it, we make a terrible mistake. And we go, oh, that's amazing. And I have to go practice that for hours to become good at making that mistake.
Yes.
And there are so many hours when you see somebody bumble, props or things or little words in clever ways that are funny. The first time's an accident, but when they can bring that to a show reliably, that's a lot of training.
Yep.
And so failure is also the ability to be wrong. It's also the ability to accept that you may fail. Let's find out what happens when you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be open to failure is to be open to trying and not succeeding.
Yes. And
so these are three big pillars to me.
Yeah, no,
Because without them, and I'm not discounting anything anybody else brings to it. I just think that without those things, without the vulnerability to be affected by what's going on around you, you're not fully present.
Mm-hmm.
Without the playfulness, you don't have a reason to do anything but endure it.
Mm-hmm.
And without the failure, well, it's not very human. It's too polished.
Yeah. I think it's funny to me listening to the things that you've brought and the things that I brought.
They're very similar. Yeah.
Is going, oh, I think we were both driving at
the same ideas.
The same ideas. Because to me, like, the emotional connection
is vulnerability.
And I think language being what it is, using the term vulnerability highlights different things than using emotional connected. But they're both the same. They're both driving in the same area. And this, the whimsy concept, as you're saying it, I'm going, that moment where I said curiosity seems like it's really important to my clown, and I don't know if it's important to every clown, but it really is important to my clown. It's because that's the form
that's the
whimsy takes
for that clown. Yeah, and I think the other thing is that I have a bigger thesaurus than you do because I'm older, and so I know more big words. The truth is that I've gone through the process both myself and also have helped a lot of people through the process, and I've looked for there are meta ideas.
Yeah.
They're all, we both landed on the same things, but there's these great sort of meta ideas, these sort of big ideas. And the biggest thing in the room, like the elephant, is this notion that we're talking about connectivity, a childlike wonder, you know, we've heard wonder. Yeah, we're talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. And having some material, which is failure, is how I find it is failure, how other people find it is mm-hmm. skill. I don't know. But it's the same ideas. And in those areas, find the words. Maybe this is the exercise mm-hmm. For our friends to consider, is to find the words that describe those things. But I also suggest it might be better to realize them than to find them, because find them means you're going to pick them. Realize them means you've noticed them.
Yes.
And that's another example.
Those are different things.
I like the use of the word, well, I realized that this is true. How did I realize that? By saying them, and I want to be clear on this. I have held every one of the opinions we've just discussed incorrectly at some point.
And then thus realize that getting stuff wrong is important.
And that's why failure makes my essential list, because otherwise I never would have got here.
Yep.
And there is my answer.
All right. Well, then I think we have, is this our last question? It's our last question.
It's whipped by today.
It has.
Okay.
Okay. So last question, but it is a triple-barreled one.
That sounds, okay, do you mean like some sort of weapon with three barrels? Or do you mean like three barrels that each one has its own unique monkey? I like that idea.
Let's go with that.
Okay, cool.
This came to us with a statement, triple-barreled question for the podcast. What music do you listen to?
Ooh.
Do you find music useful to work out to?
Mm.
And what kinds of music do you choose for performances?
Whoa!
Should we go back and forth on each one of those?
Yeah, I think we need to.
I think before trying to like get all of it from one of us.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Other. Okay, so
music we listen to.
We listen to everything around here, because one of the things, and I hate that when people say, "Oh, I listen to everything." I purposefully go out of my way. One of the things where I've actively fought my sort of sense of aging curmudgeon is to constantly seek out new music, because I am deeply affected by music.
Yes.
So one day I'm listening to, you know, Caribbean jazz, and another day I'm listening to like experimental Viking metal, and then we were, you know, then we're listening to show tunes because Liam needed to listen to show tunes.
I do like show tunes.
Quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, I feel like my music collection may be the proof that my mind is a big scattered mess because it's everything. I will say I do gravitate towards a lot of jazz. A lot of old
jazz fills this space really well,
and I think so. And I don't think it used to be that way, but I think this space really calls for it. I really love some internet radio, like Soma FM stuff. I'm going to shout them out because they have such great they have such great streaming radio stations that we will just put one of those on when we can't figure out what to play.
Yeah,
we also have an obscenely large music collection of our own. That we've collected, all of us have collected over years. Yeah. We put in one bucket, and boy, do I recommend that because then you can grab everybody's music. Related to this, I just was asked. I'll shout out another radio friend, Lover Brother Radio, Brother Soul. Hello, Brother Soul, who's a good friend, does an internet radio show, and asked me to put together. He does this thing called a pick and mix.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is he says, give me, you know, 35 or 40 songs. It's a virtual crate of like records. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do a DJ mix of that. And I said, I want to go to there. And I specifically, because he really knows me as the sort of professional circus me.
Yes.
I said, okay, I'm going to speak from that voice as opposed to like, you know, what I listen to when I'm in the house quiet and sad. And I'm going to go through a lot of stuff and have a lot of, and it was a big memory lane sort of nostalgic trip.
Mm-hmm.
They went all the way back to the beginning, and I ended up making liner notes for it. I ended up writing up like, why is each one of these songs here and what the memory attached to it is. Mm-hmm. And I have that online and a link to it in the show notes. But so there is actually a sampling, and apparently that is on replay periodically on Lover Brother Radio now. So you can go and listen to an example of the kind of nonsense I listen to. Some of it is obscure.
I am in the middle of picking a pick and mix that he's also said that he'll spin.
Okay, good.
But
clowns and DJs.
I have not yet finished that.
But what do you like to listen to? That was the question.
But I have noticed that one of the things I tend to do is let other people pick the music around me.
And then say no a little bit.
And say no every once in a while.
Yeah.
But left to my own devices, I am still stuck in the early aughts.
a lot of panic.
Yeah.
Panic at the Disco. Yeah.
I listen to a lot of Angry Boy music. From and just popular stuff. Like it's not niche. It's just popular
radio
music.
What was on the radio? Yeah.
From the early aughts and like the 2010s.
This is the way that you are the most average dude I know. I want to be clear on this. Like, you are a fascinating, vibrant person, but your music taste typically runs somewhere between musical theater and boy band.
Yeah, and then there's boy band stuff, and there's musical. There's a lot of musical theater, because I really like musical theater.
You do a bit of it, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of it.
There's one other thing that I've noticed we tend to do is a lot of times we're writing or working on things that require active brain. And that pushes us.
We don't do stuff with lyrical content.
There's a lot of time in the around the building music is not lyrical content.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, if I am working on a physical thing like a wall, it's going to be pounding rock and crazy ballads, and it's going to be loud.
Yeah. So I mean, we listen to a fair range of stuff. I was actually surprised at how much of a range I found myself pulling into that pick and mix. But a lot of it's pop. But I adore the fact that we have so much
changes.
Jazz and jazz from different cultures, and
that's a big
music
thing.
From different cultural backgrounds. is super awesome to me. It's not something I had quite as much of growing up, so I don't have as much of it in my head. Oh, and a lot of music from the 70s.
You do listen to a lot of
music. I listen to a lot of stuff from the 70s because, frankly, my mom listened to a lot of music from the 70s because that was like her jam, and I was like, this stuff's good. So that's a lot of what I listen to.
Well, then the second part of this is working out, which is substantially different than your day-to-day music.
Yes. And so it's a question of, do we find music useful to work out to?
Yeah.
100% yes.
Oh, yeah. If you have to fill the sort of dead air in a room, I feel like that's a – there's something – I can sit quietly. Like, I can sit in a room with no music, and that's no problem.
Yeah.
But if I'm supposed to be doing something and there's nothing to move to, a lot of times I'll just shut down.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it's silly club music. There's a lot of like silly club music that plays here.
Yes.
And I'm loath to shout out because it's not necessarily interesting. We could shout out Best of Booty, the remix contest.
Yes, we listen to a lot of Booty.
That's a good sentence. Well done. Yeah, it's a remix contest, and we listen to a lot of that around here. People will occasionally just like recommend something, and we'll catch it. And if it catches us, it ends up in the rotation. Mm-hmm. I know. What have we been listening to lately? Speed Kicks.
Yep.
Fair amount of them. There was something else just recently we discovered that was like, oh, that was really good. And I'm trying to remember what it was. It is gone, because my brain is bad at holding on to this stuff.
Okay.
But the idea is the workout music has a lot more energy, usually has some lyrical content.
Yep. I've actually been having a struggle. So one of the things we've also been doing is the video chats during the gym. And
we do like one a week now.
We've basically come to doing it about once a week, and it varies on which day. But we have to turn the music way down so that we're not, so that it can be muxed out by the video call software, so that we're not just playing over, so our music isn't just playing over anything people wanting to talk and stuff. And one of the things that I've been discovering is that I've been doing a lot of body movement exploration.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, how can I move my body, and does it go this direction? Does that go that direction? Can I lead with a particular body part? And I need music
to do that.
Like, I require music to lead me
to eccentric movement.
To eccentric music movement. I think I could take those movements once I've done them.
Yeah,
and I can do some of them without the music that drove them initially. But if I want to really explore, I need music and that bubble where I'm not really talking to people. So, like, it's been really helpful to have a couple of nights a week that I'm not chatting with friends, because I love chatting with friends.
You're doing it right now.
While working. I love chatting with friends.
I know I'm here, but
all the time. And in this setting, I love it. And I love doing it while I'm working out. Like, that's actually a lot of fun for me. But it was really interesting to discover that there's some stuff that I want to do.
You can't.
That I absolutely cannot do while chatting with people, and that I need music instead to be able to do it.
Well, it's good to know. I think the workout music, it's what I will say is that it's not gym bro music, but there's definitely more energy in the music. And then what I love is that Marie will actually bring a lot of like jazz and dance music, and
she knows where all the high energy jazz is.
Yeah, and so she'll bring that in during workouts, and it's great fun. We trade off who's DJing for the night,
mm-hmm.
because we really want different energy. And like when I spin stuff, it probably sounds like a club in here, and when she spins stuff, it sounds like a nightclub in here.
Yep.
And that's good. I think that's good for workouts.
I don't spin in here.
You could.
I could. I just don't.
Yeah. And then the third one is the chewiest category, which is music for performance.
Yeah, what kind of music do you choose for performances?
I have a two-pronged problem here.
Mm-hmm.
So I will bring out my fork and stab at it.
Okay.
My first problem is, after years of doing projects where we were putting everything into the Creative Commons, or we were dealing with shows with licensing complications, or I watched people not do that right, I am an enormous advocate of using either original music or unencumbered by copyrights music, or music that you have licensed directly from the artist. I am a big fan of this, and to the point where I try to feed my head that kind of music as often as possible to try to find that track I find exciting. So one of the things that I didn't mention in what am I listening to all the time is that a lot of times I am also seeking out, like, no, I'm not listening to whatever's in pop culture mainstream. I'm looking for Creative Commons artists who are doing interesting stuff that they are giving away or are very open. Like, if one of their songs grabs me, I'm familiar enough with their work and with them to reach out and say, hey, I want to do something with this.
And you can work that out.
And that's worked. It's worked really well for us. And in fact, you know, our podcast theme is one of those things that I'm very proud of, the fact that an artist, you know, put that under the same license as the podcast so we could share it. Mm-hmm. I am an enormous believer in this, both ideologically and because I have suffered the aches and pains of so many times where people hand waved a copyright and then it came to crunch us. And so now whenever I'm building an act, if it doesn't have original music or licensing lockdown, I'm not gonna use any random music.
It's not worth the likelihood that it'll just be ripped back out from under you.
Right. And one of the things that that does, though, is that you don't have control of what your heart loves. And good music may be very mainstreamy. You may love a boy band song, and it may be the right thing for your moment. So I've been lucky a few times where I've been able to use music that was either completely unencumbered or was an old standard in the public domain, or I was part of a project which allowed me to use it, or it was a friend's song, which was my favorite thing, is where I've gotten to perform to a friend's music.
Oh,
and because of that, I really am looking, when I'm looking as a performer, I am constantly seeking music in that vein. And in fact, when I'm teaching workshops and we do movement sections, I have a separate collection of music that is all, I am aware of what the licenses of these things are. They're all open licenses. I have notes on all of them, but I'll shuffle that stuff. And that way, if somebody goes, oh, that grabs me, and go, good, here's the information you need. It's yours now to create with.
Yeah, go play.
Go play. And I think that's one of the things that I get most excited about, is when you're free to use things. I believe culture should be remixed. I think copyright is a silly, broken system, personally. But I also am aware that if I want to create something, I can share, I can use.
And not have to be...
And not be screwing someone.
Not either be screwing somebody else over, or put a target on your back for...
And I've experienced...
A major organization
screw
you over.
And I've experienced both. And so now I'm very staunchly a proponent of building things. Listen to music that's in the Creative Commons. And if you find yourself moving to it, if listen to stuff that's in the public domain, listen to the stuff that's open to be used, that someone wants you to use. Because I'll tell you, I have people I know who have put their work under those kind of licenses, and they are excited for me that I've used them. Mm-hmm. They're like, you're using that? That's amazing. And that's what I want to hear, because then I don't feel like I'm getting away with it, because then it always feels dirty. The other thing I'll say is this. If you have your buddy's song and you like moving to it, you create a performance to your buddy's song instead of something you heard off the radio, no one else is using that. To your audience, it becomes your anthem. I've watched a lot of people perform to popular songs, and what we go is, oh, that's a beautiful thing to do to that song we've all heard. But then you see somebody come out and do something to a song that no one's heard, even when it's been something that was under really, typical copyright. Mm-hmm. If it's obscure and weird enough, it becomes yours.
Yeah. So you better darn well have permission to use it.
Right. And
Otherwise, you will have this thing that people start thinking of as yours, and then you can't use it anymore.
Right. You don't want that.
Like, don't set yourself up.
I've had to rebuild acts with different music. Like, I built music, and then mm-hmm. I was told, oh, you're going to have to re-choreograph the song, re-choreograph this act to different music. And I'm like, oh, that's exhausting. And I've had to do it. And it's a real chore because a lot of times you find organic, beautiful movement from music.
Yeah.
And then you can't transpose that to another song. It doesn't exist in that other song. So, and I've gotten, I want to be clear, I've gotten into roundtable arguments with other performers about this who disagree with me. This is a thing that it's a hill I'm strongly a proponent of being on. I don't think it's the only way to work, but I do think it's a good way to work for me. And it makes me feel more free to create because I don't feel like I'm taking from anyone because people are giving me things. And let me be clear on this. None of what I just said involved not paying people.
Yeah.
I want to be 100% clear that all of that comes with, if there are royalties, maybe you gotta pay people.
Yeah. And if it is unencumbered music, if it's something people gave out there,
hit the tip jar.
And if you have to wait until you make some money off of it, sure.
And I don't
wait till you do. And then
I don't want to slam. You know, it's not a thing I like to focus on. We're talking about the work. Mm-hmm. It's not a part of the work I like to focus on. But ultimately, legal things exist. Money exists. We have to deal with it. Finding ways to navigate that where what you're ultimately doing is promoting people and things you like.
Yeah.
Sounds you like. And there's so much music that's being freely given. Every performer I meet, this is a talk I give them. I say, consider using this music because there are so many reasons, great reasons, not to go for, oh, this song is popular. One of the best reasons is it's a popular song. What happens when it's not popular? What happens if and I've seen this happen to a performer I know. They had a tremendous act to a popular song.
Mm-hmm.
And then that artist, who they didn't know they were just using their music, fell under some scrutiny for something they did.
Oh, no.
And yeah, at that point, you're now associated with that because you're performing to it. You're playing it in the room. Don't bring it into the room. Instead, bring your friends.
Yeah.
One of the great things that I'm so lucky to have done is I've worked with a lot of musicians, and most of them, you know, I could, if I had, and I have done this, and if I had a moment where I was like, oh, you know what, this song that this friend of mine did is really good, I wonder if I could use, they'd be like, oh, and I know that's true because we have done that a few times.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, this is, thank you so much for letting me use your music. So
also reach out to artists that you know and ask, because not everybody does put it out into the public domain, and rights reserved includes the right to say that person can use it.
Correct.
So,
and this feels ugly, but I'll give a piece of advice to performers and professionals. When you get that permission, get it in writing. Not because I think your friend's going to go back on you, but because moving forward as something grows.
Oh yeah.
You're gonna have to interface with something larger than you, and that thing's gonna want more legal paper than you have.
Yes. And I wanna stop for a second and back up and point out that we have not always played by these rules.
No, this is something I evolved to over a decade of continually working towards it, and it's because every show had a unique headache related to licensing. And one day I went, what if we built a show without that? And then we did, and it was like,
yeah,
headache free. So, there was a whole to-do list that just evaporated.
We're still at the place of having to, like, some of our go-to stuff, still, basically everything that I built.
No, yeah, it's
incredible. It has some sort of music that has...
Send Liam music.
Copyright problems.
He can create theater too. Send him your favorite Creative Commons...
Please do.
...open licensed boy band nonsense.
Because I really started as a performer as somebody who was performing cover music. And there's a real disconnect between what is legally true in the United States with regard to how copyright works and how people behave like it works.
Right. And study a copyright, kids.
I'm not saying that there is I don't think it's wrong to be going and doing covers of songs.
No.
And I don't want to put on the record anything that indicates that I have a problem with that. I started by doing cover music, and I think it's a wonderful learning process, and I think it's something that could use more defense than it has.
On a related note, mm-hmm. and I think my final thought on all of this, if you possibly get the opportunity, and I must be clear, I am uniquely spoiled in a lifetime of being surrounded by talented people. Performing to live accompaniment has been one of the greatest joys of my performing career. Getting to perform to a musician on stage who is accompanying me, not just playing their song, but is with me, has been...
That's a real joy.
It is the best part of my job. And at that point, I'll say, find a song you can do and do that for life, because it's such a beautiful moment when you move and you move at a natural speed and the music moves with you.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have a little pause and the music slows down with you and the emotions with you, it's a really beautiful dance. And I've been lucky enough to dance that dance more than a few times. And it's one of the great feelings. And additionally, it's in the room. It's live.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a canned track. It's not playing out of a speaker. There is another human there adding their energy to your performance. It becomes something really magical. So the final thought I have is, and if at all possible, even if it is nothing more, and we did an incredible act that you did nothing more than play repeating chords on a guitar.
Noodling on a guitar.
One of the most beautiful acts it was hilarious and it was kind of beautiful. It was just you playing chords gently in the background, and that was all it needed to bed it so it wasn't happening in silence.
Yeah.
So sometimes it can be way, this is the thing, it can be way simpler, because a lot of me, the most difficult thing in choosing music for performance is finding music that has room for the performer. If you have a song with all of its and its lyrics and everything's happening,
then you're tied to it.
Well, more than that, where do you go? Where do you go? When you have a piece that's a little more sparse, there's room for your movement.
Yeah.
So there you go. The other thing, I have a piece of advice from an old clown teacher of mine who said, when you think you know your act and you think it's good, and you think you got your music, and you think you got it all sorted out, take the music out and perform it and see if it still works. See what's going on with your timing. Make sure that you're not just dancing along to a song. That's a clown teacher note I got once, and I was like, it's a really good note. And one of the most awful things is at the time, I was developing an act that absolutely has that problem.
Yeah.
It is one of the best acts I do, and I did not end up changing it. Other acts I did fix that problem. But it was a tough note to get, because I knew it was right, but I knew the act I was doing was good. So that's a toughie, and you got to decide how you feel about that.
But yeah, so that's the music we choose for performances.
Music we choose for performances, around the house, whatever we need, depending on what we're doing. And in the gym, we like to rock out a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Or dance. We need to move.
A lot of dancing.
A lot of dance. We need to move.
So dance, if you want to.
Or not. We won't leave you behind.
We'll
bring you along.
That's it. That's all we got.
I mean, if you'd indicated that, I could have done I had a thing, but I wasn't sure if we had another question.
I told you this was the last question.
I lost that part. Okay, because here's the thing. Dance if you want to leave your friends behind, but we won't. We'll be with you right here on...
Two Clowns in a Closet.
How good is that?
It's beautiful.
If we had done that, people would have been like, wow, these people are really talented, and I love the way they do that. But we blew it.
We did.
We failed.
Because we're clowns.
And it's important. I enjoyed this time.
So did I. I hope you did too.
Yeah. We'll see you next time. And in the meantime, take a deep breath, listen to some music, try to find some whimsy, and we'll talk to you next time. It was at this point I realized I gotta walk all the way to the door.
The door is a while away.
It's all the way. Hang on. It's all the way over here. I got the theme song. Hang on. I promised. Really good theme song. That's not it.